Welcome back, everyone, to another deep dive. Today we are going to tackle something that might, might make your brain do a double take.
Ooh, I like that.
How do you accurately translate something that's not meant to be taken literally?
Yeah, it's a puzzle.
Yeah.
And it's one that biblical scholars and translators, they wrestle with constantly.
Right. And for this deep dive, we've got some really great material from Dr. George Payton. He's a true expert in Bible translation.
Absolutely.
And he really breaks down how figures of speech can make things tricky for anyone trying to get the true meaning across in another language.
Yeah, and I think by the end of this, you'll start to see some of those passages in a whole new light.
Yeah.
And maybe even catch yourself using some of these literary devices without even realizing it.
Absolutely, yeah. So let's jump right in with what Dr. Payton calls personification. He uses the example, fear came on all those living around them, which is describing the reaction to John the Baptist's birth. It's giving fear, which is an abstract idea, human-like qualities.
Right.
Like it can physically come on someone.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where the challenge for translators pops up. Imagine trying to, translate that into a language where the concept of fear as a standalone thing doesn't even exist.
Okay, that is a head scratcher for sure.
Yeah.
How do you get that same feeling across without just saying, well, they were scared? It seems like you lose something in the translation.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
You absolutely would lose some of the nuance.
Mm-hmm.
The original wording emphasizes how powerful and overwhelming that fear was.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just that they were scared.
Right.
It's that fear descended upon them.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So how would a translator tackle that? Would they just have to settle for a less impactful phrase?
Not necessarily.
Yeah.
Not necessarily. A skilled translator would dig deeper into the intended meaning,
yeah,
and find a way to express it in the target language. Maybe they use a verb that implies a sudden and forceful experience. Or they might find a cultural equivalent that conveys the same sense of being overwhelmed by fear. Remember, it's about conveying the feeling, not just the literal words.
That makes sense. It's like the translator is a detective trying to uncover clues and solve the mystery of the original meaning.
I love that analogy.
Yeah.
It really captures the essence of what good translation is all about.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about word-for-word substitution.
Right.
It's about understanding the nuances of both languages,
yeah,
and finding creative ways to bridge the gap.
And sometimes that gap can feel like a chasm. Dr. Payton gives another example that really struck me.
Okay.
He talks about how your faith has made you well gets translated as, because you believed, you were healed.
Right.
What are your thoughts on that shift? To me, it feels like the emphasis changes slightly.
It's subtle but significant, isn't it?
Yeah.
The original phrasing, with faith as the subject, puts more focus on the power of belief itself. The translation, because you believed, shifts the emphasis to the individual's act of believing as the catalyst for healing.
It almost sounds like they're downplaying the role of faith a bit.
Yeah.
Do you think that's something translators have to be careful about? Potentially introducing their own biases into the translation?
That's a great point. It's something that good translators are always aware of. They strive for neutrality, but it's an incredibly difficult task because language itself is inherently loaded with cultural and personal perspectives.
So how do they walk that tightrope?
It's about being incredibly sensitive to the nuances of both the source and target languages, and striving for a translation that is both faithful to the original meaning and understandable to the audience.
Right.
It often involves a lot of research, consultation with experts, and careful consideration of the cultural context.
It's a reminder that even something as seemingly straightforward as translation is much more complex than we might realize.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it gets even trickier when we start dealing with figures of speech like metonymy and synecdoche, which Dr. Payton admits can be hard to tell apart.
He's not kidding. But the basic idea, if I'm understanding this correctly,
yeah,
is that one thing stands in for something else that's closely related. Like if I said, I love listening to the deep dive, I'm obviously referring to this specific podcast, not to the act of diving deep into anything.
That's a perfect example.
Right.
And what makes these figures of speech so challenging for translators is that they rely heavily on shared cultural understanding.
Okay.
A phrase that makes perfect sense in one culture might be utterly baffling in another.
So it's like an inside joke that only works if you're part of the club.
Yes.
But translating that joke to someone who's never even heard of the club is a recipe for confusion.
Precisely, precisely.
Yeah.
And Dr. Payton gives some fun examples to illustrate this.
Okay.
He talks about how saying, you know, I like reading Shakespeare doesn't mean you enjoy reading the man himself.
Right.
But rather his works.
Right.
Or how Dallas won today refers to the sports team.
Uh-huh.
Not the entire city of Dallas going on some victory rampage.
And then there's the classic, the White House announced.
Yes.
Which everyone understands means the president, or at least someone speaking on their behalf.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
These examples might seem obvious to us, but for someone unfamiliar with our culture,
yeah,
they could be incredibly confusing.
So for a translator, it's not just about understanding the languages, it's about understanding the cultures those languages represent.
Yes.
That's a tall order.
It certainly is. And it's what makes translation such a fascinating and challenging field.
Yeah.
You're constantly bridging worlds, mm-hmm. trying to capture not just the words,
right.
but the essence of what's being said.
Speaking of bridging worlds, let's dive into a specific example where these figures of speech really come into play. The battle between the four kings and five kings in Genesis 14.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
The story with the tar pits. Dr. Payton uses this passage to show just how much these literary devices can complicate things, even for seasoned translators.
Huh.
Are you ready to get into the nitty-gritty of it?
Absolutely. Let's see what kind of trouble those kings got themselves into, shall we?
So in Genesis 14, we've got this epic battle going on. Dr. Payton really paints a vivid picture of this scene. Kings clashing, armies battling it out.
Yeah.
And then to make things even more interesting, there are these tar pits.
Oh, yeah.
They come into play.
Right.
Talk about adding insult to injury.
It's like something out of an action movie.
Right.
And it's in verse 10 where things get really tricky.
Mm-hmm.
It says, the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled and they fell into them. At first glance, it seems pretty straightforward, but then you start to wonder, who exactly are they?
That's the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
And as Dr. Payton points out, different Bible translations actually disagree on this point.
Oh, really?
Some translations say it was the kings themselves who tumbled into the tar pits.
Okay.
While others imply that it was their armies.
Gotcha. Or maybe even both.
Wait, really? Different translations say different things. That's kind of unsettling, isn't it? Like, which one is right?
It's definitely a head-scratcher. And it highlights just how much interpretation is involved in translation.
Yeah.
Remember, the goal is to convey the intended meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that means going beyond a literal word-for-word translation.
So in this case, what's the intended meaning? Did the kings fall into the tar pits, or was it their armies, or both?
Well, that's where things get really interesting. The Hebrew style in this passage is super concise.
Okay.
And it assumes that the reader will understand that the kings represent not only themselves, but also their armies.
So it's like shorthand.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah.
Like saying England scored a goal in a soccer match.
Exactly.
Meaning the English team scored, not the entire country.
And to make things even more intriguing, if we look a little further in Genesis, see that the king of Sodom shows up later, alive and well.
So unless he's got some incredible tar pit escape skills.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't have been one of they who fell in.
Okay, now I'm really starting to see how these figures of speech can create some serious confusion.
Right.
If they're not handled carefully. It's like a literary puzzle box, and the translator has to figure out how to open it without breaking anything.
I love that imagery.
Yeah.
And it's not just about avoiding confusion.
Yeah.
It's about ensuring that the richness and depth of the original text are carried over into the translation.
Okay.
In this case, understanding that the kings represent their armies adds a whole new layer of meaning to the passage.
Right.
It emphasizes the magnitude of the defeat.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just a few individuals who perished, but entire armies.
Wow. I never would have picked up on that just reading the passage on my own.
Right.
It really shows how much value a good translator adds. It's like they're giving us a guided tour of the text, pointing out all the hidden gems we might otherwise miss.
Exactly. They're helping us to appreciate the text on a deeper level, to see the connections and nuances that might not be immediately apparent. And that brings us back to the heart of our discussion, the power and complexity of figurative language.
It's amazing how much these seemingly simple figures of speech can impact our understanding of a text.
Yeah.
It makes you realize how important it is to be an active reader.
Mm-hmm.
Not just passively taking in the words, but really engaging with them, thinking about what they mean and how they're being used.
Absolutely. And this active engagement is even more crucial when we're dealing with texts from different cultures and time periods.
You're right.
We need to be aware of the cultural context, the historical background, and the literary conventions that were at play when the text was written.
It's like being a detective trying to piece together all the clues to solve the mystery of the text's true meaning.
Exactly. And speaking of figures of speech, let's move on to one that's perhaps the most familiar.
Okay.
And yet still incredibly powerful.
Yeah.
The metaphor.
Metaphors. Those beautiful poetic comparisons that add so much color and depth to language. It's like they allow us to see the world through a different lens, to grasp abstract concepts in a more concrete and relatable way.
Precisely. Metaphors are like bridges, connecting the familiar to the unfamiliar, the concrete to the abstract.
Yeah.
They can help us to understand complex ideas, to express profound emotions, and to create vivid images in our minds.
Dr. Payton dives into metaphors next in his lecture, but unfortunately, our excerpts end here.
Oh.
It's like we've reached the end of the trail just as things were getting really exciting.
I know. It's a bit of a cliffhanger.
Right.
But even without those specific examples, I think we can appreciate how metaphors, like the other figures of speech we've discussed, can both enrich communication and create challenges for translators.
It's that double-edged sword again, the power of language to convey so much meaning,
yes,
but also the potential for misunderstanding and misinterpretation.
Exactly. And that's why it's so important for translators to be sensitive to the nuances of both the source and target languages,
right,
to understand the cultural context,
mm-hmm,
and to find creative ways to bridge the gap between worlds.
It's like they're not just translating words, they're translating cultures, ideas, and even emotions.
Yes.
It's really a remarkable skill.
It is.
And one that we often take for granted.
I couldn't agree more. Translators play a vital role in helping us to understand and appreciate different cultures and perspectives.
Yeah.
They're the unsung heroes of communication, bridging linguistic and cultural divides and opening up new worlds of understanding.
And they do all of this while juggling figures of speech, cultural nuances,
yeah,
and the ever-present challenge of finding just the right word to convey the intended meaning.
It's no easy feat.
Yeah.
But I think we can all agree that their work is invaluable in helping us to navigate the complexities of language and to connect with each other across cultures and continents.
So, as we wrap up our deep dive into figurative language in the Bible, what's the key takeaway for our listeners?
I think it's a reminder that language is a powerful tool, capable of expressing profound truths and complex emotions,
mm-hmm,
in ways that literal language often can't.
Yeah.
But this power comes with a responsibility to use language carefully and thoughtfully.
Right.
Especially when trying to bridge the gap between cultures and languages.
Absolutely. It's about being aware of the nuances of language,
mm-hmm,
the cultural context,
yes,
and the potential for misinterpretation.
Yes.
And it's about appreciating the skill and artistry of those who dedicate themselves to the challenging but rewarding task of translation.
Well said. And I think it's also a reminder that even something as seemingly simple as reading a text can be a deeply engaging and intellectually stimulating experience.
Yeah.
It's about being an active reader, asking questions, considering different perspectives,
right,
and delving beneath the surface to uncover the hidden layers of meaning.
It really makes you realize that there's so much more to language than just the words on the page.
Absolutely. It's like an iceberg.
Yeah.
What you see on the surface is just a tiny fraction of what lies beneath, and that's what makes studying language so fascinating. There's always more to discover, more to learn, more to appreciate.
And I think that's a great note to end on. So for all you listeners out there, next time you're reading the Bible or any text, for that matter, take a moment to really savor the language.
Yeah.
Pay attention to those figures of speech, those subtle nuances, those moments where the author is using language to paint a picture, to evoke an emotion,
yes,
to transport you to another place and time.
And don't be afraid to ask questions.
Mm.
If something seems unclear, if a passage feels confusing,
yeah,
dig a little deeper, consult different translations, read commentaries, talk to scholars.
All right.
The more you engage with the text, the more you'll get out of it.
Right. It's like we said earlier, be an active reader, be a detective, be a word nerd. Because there's a whole world of meaning hidden within those pages, just waiting to be discovered.
Well said. And I think that's a perfect way to wrap up our deep dive into figurative language in the Bible.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure exploring this fascinating topic with you.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We'll see you next time for another fascinating exploration of language, culture, and ideas. It really makes you realize that there's so much more to language than just the words on the page.
Absolutely. It's like an iceberg. What you see on the surface is just a tiny fraction of what lies beneath.
Yeah.
And that's that's what makes studying language so fascinating. There's always more to discover, more to learn, more to appreciate.
And I think that's a great note to end on. So for all you listeners out there, next time you're reading the Bible or any text for that matter, take a moment to really sable the language. Pay attention to those figures of speech, those subtle nuances, those moments where the author is using language to paint a picture, to evoke an emotion, to transport you to another place and time.
And don't be afraid to ask questions. If something seems unclear, if a passage feels confusing, dig a little deeper. Consult different translations, read commentaries, talk to scholars. You know, the more you engage with the text, the more you'll get out of it.
It's like we said earlier, be an active reader, be a detective, be a word nerd, because there's a whole world of meaning hidden within those pages just waiting to be discovered.
Well said. And I think that's a perfect way to wrap up our deep dive into figurative language in the Bible. It's been a pleasure exploring this fascinating topic with you.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll see you next time for another fascinating exploration of language, culture, and ideas.